Welcome to the In Awe podcast, where we amplify women and empower a community through the mission and their message. I am your host, Sarah Johnson, English teacher and school principal turned author and entrepreneur, living my own leap of faith on a mission to teach masses. You can find me on Twitter, Instagram, LinkedIn, and Facebook at Sarah S. A. Johnson. Be sure to subscribe to the In Awe podcast so you can join me each week as I feature women who will leave us all in awe of their impact on our world. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the In Awe podcast, where we are in the month of March 2024, and we are celebrating Women's History, my friends. Here in the United States, it is a time earmarked to really just celebrate the achievements, the accomplishments, the contributions from women across the country and throughout history. And it is with great joy that I use this platform to do just that, and especially to share with you an incredible person on this interview today, a person who really has a deep impact locally and beyond, and someone who lives life with incredible purpose. I'm so excited to introduce to you Michelle Webb. She has over 27 years of experience in education, to include teaching, administration, and division-wide leadership experience. Having a business and marketing background, Michelle has extensive experience in various industries, including athletics, private education, and K-12 public education, spanning across four large school divisions. She has multiple credentials in facilitating workshops, keynote presentations, and coaching individuals to maximize their purpose. Her certifications are impressive, and they include Maxwell Presenter and Coach, Gallup Strengths Coach, Fierce Conversations, and Covey Facilitator. Michelle has a passion to support individuals to maximize their full potential. She has pioneered school and division-wide initiatives that have resulted in sustained impact. Currently, Michelle leads the Leadership Development Program in Prince William County Public Schools. She continues to be an advocate to educate our children in order to make a difference in our society. She strives to develop leadership by instilling life skills, resiliency, and how to be a goal-driven and reflective person. Overall, Michelle strives to inspire individuals to realize and achieve their ultimate purpose. In this episode, we discuss Michelle's journey from business and marketing into the classroom and into administration, what ultimately led her to do the leadership development work. Now, her insightful thoughts about keeping current in leadership topics and what it takes to lead in schools today, and her dynamic upbringing that helped inform her purposed leadership beyond the scope of her leadership titles. My friends, I have known Michelle for approximately 5 years, and what I can tell you is that every little interaction that I have had with her has an impact on me. I always feel uplifted and purposed and affirmed in my work when I walk away from her. The best part about featuring her on the podcast this month is that I finally got a really beautiful opportunity to sit down and have an in-depth conversation with this incredible leader who, I can tell you from personal experience, lives in such a way that the ripples are many and beautiful, and her work is gorgeous. So it is a deep honor not only to know her, but to have had this really, I think it's going to be a very authentic and insightful conversation that you're going to enjoy. I know that there is a mission in her message. There was one for me. We found out that we have more commonalities than we would have ever thought after having this conversation, and I am so excited for you to take part in it. Please note her contact information and reach out to her after this episode, because I know that she has so much to give you. Even if it's just this listening to this episode, that's great, but otherwise, you can reach out to her for some work if you are interested in that as well. Without further ado, it is with great honor that I share with you why I am so in awe of Michelle Webb's story. Welcome, Michelle Webb, to the In Awe podcast. I am so glad that you were able to make space and join me today. How are you?
I'm wonderful. Thank you for having me.
Michelle, I know that my listeners are in for such a treat today. I am personally just super excited to share this space with you and get to know you better, but also to amplify your story through this podcast. And I read your bio at the beginning, but would you share just a little bit about kind of like what your current context is and what you're up to in this beautiful world?
Sure. So the gift that I get to have is working in a role that is extremely fulfilling. So what I do for purpose and for income is that I am I support the leadership development programming for a large division here in Northern Virginia. So I supervise leadership development, where I support aspiring leaders, new leaders, seasoned leaders, both in schools and in central office. I'm also about 20, a little over 27 years now in education. and serving in many different capacities that have led me to this time in my journey. And there's a lot of, you know, pivots and experiences along the way that I'm sure we will probably get to speak to. I have a loving husband, a very supportive husband who we've been married now 22 years. And two amazing young boys, Mason and Cruz, who are my twin boys, who are just turning 12 today, actually. So yes, being a very busy wife, mom, and someone who just loves to impart to people as much as I get the opportunity to.
Well, happy birthday to your boys. And thank you for joining
me.
You said that in the pre-conversation. I was just stunned and grateful that you would join on such a beautiful day. And happy birthday to you too, because being a mom of twins sure has to be something.
Yes. No, it's been quite the joy for sure.
Well, that's awesome. So I wanted to just peel apart a little bit. Your current role is leadership development in a very large division. And so I'm looking, you know, looking back at your bio and kind of all the pivots that you've taken, you lead when we say a very large division, we're talking pretty massive by most people's standards. So I'm just kind of curious, like, what does your day-to-day look like in a role like that?
Oh, one essential part is a lot of planning, a lot of for curriculum design, a lot of listening tours on the needs of what our leaders have, so that you can orchestrate and put together comprehensive leadership development programming. So there is a lot of coordination, development, research, really being on top of your craft with what modern day leaders are facing and the mindset, skills, and behaviors they need to have in order to just meet the needs in the current society. And we know in education in itself has its own demands, but I also really, I study multiple industries. I love, my background is in marketing and business. So I had my initial degree, if you would, was in business organization and management. And so I really love structure, systemic way of thinking. And so I study a lot of Fortune 500 companies, industries across multiple specialties to really determine what are the dominant behaviors, as I shared earlier, and maybe the knowledge pieces or skills that folks need to have in order to really lead in today's workplace. So it's a lot of research. It's a lot of planning. It's a lot of delivery. My joy, it's funny. One of my Gallup strengths is futuristic. And so, and I also, you know, I'm always thinking ahead. And so the design piece, even when I was a teacher, designing lessons, designing innovative projects, that still continues to give me great joy with our leaders of designing all these, you know, innovative experiences that they can have to really make an impact on their work. So that is exciting to me. And then where I'm most fulfilled is really that standing and delivering. Do a lot of delivery of professional learning, facilitating many different workshop style formats, and then a lot of coaching and sometimes just listening. A core value of mine is a lot has to do with confidentiality. It also has to do with really listening to understand. And many times, the higher you go in leadership, the lonelier it is. And so when you can sit and be able to listen to someone who just needs to kind of get out how they're feeling, they sometimes answer their own questions just in that process. But it is a lot of coaching and listening, supporting, sometimes consulting, encouraging, and just having a safe place for folks to go to. So those types of things, it is funny. And my mom, who's also in sort of a social work industry, we often talk about, man, why are we so tired, you know, when we get home? And it's not so much physical as it is, you know, you are really, you know, when you give your all, when you do care and have a passion just for people, and people are giving to you all the things that they are also going through, it does exert a lot of energy, I would say. So, but very fulfilling type of work I get to do.
Absolutely. And I know from just our connections over the past several years, what a ripple effect that care and compassion that you do have for the people that you work with is really evident. And I know that it's a well-respected and deeply appreciated stance that you take. I also, as I'm listening, I was thinking about The wide range of services that you do provide in that role is fantastic. And how you said that you utilize, industry and research to know what current leaders need, I deeply appreciate, because you could easily position yourself as an expert in leadership.
I don't know about that, but thank you.
But you could. But I just love that approach that you say you continuously learn, because certainly your role had to have come with pretty massive challenges through, the pandemic and kind of coming out afterward, trying to lead organizations toward whatever the version of excellence looks like in our academic worlds. It's very challenging.
Yeah, it really is. What's intriguing when I reflect back, I think I shared this earlier, but my original being a business marketing background, when I first started teaching, it was in marketing and business. So I was a CTE, very proud CTE, high school teacher. Yes.
Shout out.
Love. And again, just preparing, my favorite was the 11th and 12th grade, because they were in a transition time of going from high school into the world of work. And not to age myself, but I remember years and years ago them talking about, oh, the, 21st century and when we were going to get to 2020 and how, how long ago that felt like it was going to be. But it was how this workforce was going to be so dramatically different. And we were preparing kids and we had to, really break tradition and go to innovation in education and how hard that is. We continue to see that we cannot break a lot of traditions with the way in which we have standardized testing, the way in which we teach content. It is very hard to get out of tradition. And so as a result, how are we preparing? And one of the things I love so much about our leader and in our division is that it doesn't just end when they receive their diploma. Our success is measured on when our kids really go into their communities and have opportunities to have a fulfilling and purpose-driven life. And that goes beyond, that's multiple pathways to get there. And so what skills are we in, giving our students? And so what's fascinating is studying that and being so intentional about that support for students from years and years of my career. As I matriculate now and I look at where I'm at now, it is fascinating to see that we are looking to incorporate many skills with leaders who are leading in today's workforce, right? So what we were preparing before is really what we're seeing evidence of right now. And we are in a very knowledge-based digital age. Education has become probably more political than it has ever had, especially public education. We also have very knowledgeable parents and communities. And when you deal with anybody's, as I say, I call us a passion industry. And when you're working with people's kids who they love and taxpayer funding, you are really working in a passion type of situation. And so we take every student, every fiscal responsibility very serious to maximize what we want to produce for our students in our communities. And so I think that's the magnitude. And with that comes great rewards, as well as, a lot of challenges to get to those rewards.
You just stated that so eloquently through the process of my PhD, and my coursework is complete. But
oh, congratulations. That's okay. Pretty big.
Well, thank you. But I'm still trying to work on my dissertation. So send help for, that. But reason I mention it is because this last year I was studying global leadership and change is, it's a long story, but that's the degree that I'll end up getting. And exactly what you said, like terms of timeline and your personal lived experience where that was projecting forward to the period that we're living in now is absolutely accurate. And it's things that people worldwide have known for quite a little while. It's something called the fourth industrial revolution and globalization coming together. And it's something that I just wouldn't have known had I not been like forced to study it, I guess. But
sure,
everything that you're saying is just, it's this convalescence of now. And that's so hard because I also heard you talk about the fact that we can't break tradition away from the standardized testing. And yet we're really trying to meet the need of what's current. And that becomes a values misalignment in a lot of ways in our school systems.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, it is something when you really want, and yet at the same breath, you know, you wonder why that is and what stifles us. At the same breath, you also want every child to be afforded great opportunities, no matter where they come from, no matter what the zip code. Every child deserves the opportunity to receive high quality education. So accountability becomes very high. And so, you know, the intentionality, yes, of some of these, of, you know, whether it be testing or any other measures, is with good intent to try to ensure that there's equitable opportunities. And I think it's just kind of, at what cost is that? And how can we be creative and innovative in the ways in which we approach students? And, you know, again, there's some amazing things that are going on in school divisions and in schools. And I think we're just in a society now where everything is so quick. I was like teasing with my group about how everything is about being faster. Even a credit card, you know, swiping was too slow. We had to get to, we had to tap. And I was laughing because I was like, you know what? That moves even lines so much quicker. So everything's about quick, 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 and efficiency and moving things through. And when you're working with people, it doesn't happen as quick. And so it's a matter of how do we still appreciate all of them. I don't know how I functioned before without having online banking. I have no idea, you know, the amount of paper checks and all the things that you once had to do. So much great things that come from technology. And yet, how do we still embark upon connection and people and taking time for what matters? That's the balance. Or the integration, as we say, right? Work-life integration, or I've also heard work-life harmony. How do we maximize, but yet still have the opportunity to slow down? And I think that's what we're trying to have as a workforce, that we're trying to do with students to learn. And that's just a day, as you said, leading through change. That is, it's constant when you're leading in an environment that's continuously changing and evolving.
I could listen to you talk forever. I think that obviously our audience, you clearly know why Michelle is in the position that she's in, and just really deeply appreciate how you address the tension point between figuring out how to hold our practices, you know, accountable with that standardization so that every kid gets a chance to be able to have a high quality and equitable education. And it's funny, my husband's in education. We were just talking about, he came home from lunch yesterday and he was doing a lecture in sociology. And he was saying how he should have invited me in because now I have these insights across the country, not just Wisconsin. And I was sharing with him some of my experiences and he was just stunned because of the practices that are in place in a lot of the systems that are outside of what his experience is. And as a teacher, he's 22 years in. And, you know, he's like, well, Sir Ken Robinson says that standardization stifles creativity. And I'm like, I know, honey, but we have to have a measure to help all students to make sure, because that's where that tension point comes in, right? Is to make
absolutely
sure that we know what target we're hitting. And there is that really important, as you said, harmony between the two.
Yes. As Sir Ken Robinson, loved him. I had the opportunity to hear him live, which was of the best. Yes. And just, And that is exactly it. At one cost, you know, at the cost of what, right? What can we not have? And yet what is it intended to do? And again, you're looking at opportunity cost on both ends of that. So fascinating topic for sure. Yeah.
Thank you for taking the lead and doing the work that you're doing right now to serve leaders who are, you know, thrust into this tension point, but obviously so benefiting from your care and concern and guidance. I have to ask you, you started out in business and marketing, but what in the world led you into education?
Great question. It's funny. Aging myself a little bit. I don't know if you remember Melrose Place.
But oh my goodness.
I know. I used to watch that show and all of the women with their suits and their, you know, briefcases. I went into business originally as a business major, wanted to study various aspects, didn't know what type of business I wanted to go into. At one point, I thought I wanted to own my own beauty salon. So I did try to go get my beauty, you know, my license. And then I was a beauty school dropout. I loved it, but I know I didn't want to do the craft of it. I wanted to learn it because I wanted to run the business side of it. And so then I continued to explore, and I was working in multiple different industries, whether it be real estate, dabbled in different pieces. I was always one who did internships or job shadowing, or actually worked. You know, my first job was Dairy Queen as a teenager, working and really studying all things business, whether it be on the accounting side, organization, management, and such. And so I was very independent. I had great, loving family, had the ambition to want to live on my own. So at the age of 20, I wanted to, you know, live in my own place. And my dad kind of laughed at me. And not laughed in a bad way, but just, oh, kid, you know, you don't, you know, you can't live on your own type of thing. And that the competitive part of me was like, oh, yes, I can, you know. And so I worked really hard. I did have my own place that I had the opportunity to live in. So I was working full time while going to school full time. And one of the jobs that I did was in a private school. And I was an assistant to the athletic director there, who was a former professional athlete. And I did a lot of the community events. I did a lot of the athletic events. I did all the operation side of running events and things of that nature while I was going to school. And in that role, I fell in love with teenagers. They came in and out of the office. Again, whether it be problems, social problems, school problems, problems. We had a little like a sofa in the office, and it became the comfort place for teens to come when they were just having a moment. I remember writing so many passes for kids to get back into class, because they would just come, and they just, again, just like the adults that I serve now, it was then that they just needed to listen, know that somebody cared about them, and, you know, encourage them along the way. And I just fell in love working with teenagers. In my college experience, I was continuing to finish my degree. My advisor said, and I was talking to her about it, I told her how much I really loved working with students. And she said, you know, where you're at in your degree, you have this amount of credits all from the business college, and you have your AAS already as you're getting your bachelor's. We can add a few things to your course list, and you can get a certification that would allow you to teach business and marketing in schools. Would that be something you're interested in? Because they had marketing, of course, had sports and entertainment marketing. And because I was in the athletic realm, fashion marketing and all the fun things, it was very intriguing. And what's interesting about this is it was, you know, again, well over 25 years ago. And the advisor said then CTE is almost going to go away. It was traditionally a vocational program. It's going to almost go away. And then because everything was about the college going culture, right? It was to push folks to go to college, but it's going to make a big surge to come back, because it's going to be about multiple pathways for folks to be successful. And it's going to really become on the forefront, but you may have to relocate to some bigger divisions, because not all school divisions will have multiple offerings, you know, for positions. And I just look back at, wow, how right on was she in her advice to me. And so that's the premise that I allowed me to change and course. And then I got my certification to teach marketing. And so after being in private school for about 6 years, I stayed in that one role and became the actual athletic director at a very young age. So I was promoted from assistant to the athletic director. I was a part of the administrative team. I had to do parent meetings, coaching evaluations, all the things, and took on the opportunity to go into then public school. And that's where I started my journey in public education, as being a teacher. And so that's what prompted is the change, is just really finding great joy and fulfillment in the connection that I was making with teenagers.
Just a really beautiful journey. And of all the details that you shared there, which I just want to geek out and peel every last element of that apart to say how it's informed what you're doing now. I love that you started with kids, that it was like, you know, the teenagers that would come in to the space and need a soft landing space. And that, my friend, is something we both know has never changed. They just show their need a little differently.
Yes, true.
I love too that you ended up in leadership role so early, and how that absolutely has to inform your skills and capabilities now.
Yeah. When you say that, I was talking with someone, we were talking about just different journeys. And I think having great parents, great mentors and teachers and influences in my life, I had great confidence instilled in me, that there wasn't fear or things of that nature. But when I reflect back at how young I was and really being such a young and female at the time, there was not many females in athletic administration. It was a very male dominant industry. And then being so young. So I, you know, had both obstacles, if you would, to really build credibility in that role. And when I reflect back on that, it was, wow, what made me think I can even do that? I even was like, you know, when I look at others who are in their early 20s, what would have made me even feel like I could do that? And being in situations where some position gave me great opportunity to have influence, but I didn't have the years. So I didn't have the age, right? And again, when you get into a female and a male dominant, you had to really, really prove yourself. And that just comes with fostering credibility, which again, that's a series actually I teach related to trust, but it is about building your competence, showing your character. And that over time really does foster credibility. As I reflected even in some of the reflections that we do in our leadership stories, those are powerful, pivotal moments that even at the time, I didn't realize what I was learning, but it is so essential to what I have the opportunity to pour into, especially a lot of our young leaders who are early 20s, early 30s in some leadership positions that they're facing a lot of challenges.
Absolutely. And as I was thinking about this, and you kind of said, you know, you were fortunate to have an upbringing that instilled some confidence in you, obviously trying to venture out at 20, you know, it makes me think about those characteristics of a resilient leader. And this phase that I'm in right now in my research is that they're in terms of resilience and resiliency, because we know leaders need that. The first wave of research was about what qualities make a person resilient. The second wave of research was, okay, how can we build this in people? And the third is, what is the spirit or the purpose inside of them that actually drives it? And that's the crux of my research, because I'm trying to determine if there's a connection between spiritual self-care and a person's individual resiliency. And I feel like I'm leading the witness a little bit, but I was thinking about the fact that you have this really cool background that kind of stems outside of your professional role that is clearly guided in a strong faith and purpose. Do you want to talk a little bit about your venture and making a difference, that organization and the connections there to your upbringing, as well as kind of what guides your purpose beyond maybe a particular title?
Yes, absolutely. So I was raised, my father was actually a minister growing up. He was a Vietnam vet, actually. So he, before I was born, he served in Vietnam. And then he went to theology school, him and my mom, very young, and were ministers when I was born. I grew up in a very, you know, if some of those who have ministers who are parents, they're known as PKs. And so I had the PK syndrome. And but one thing I can say about my parents that maybe that I, they're non-denominational is what we were brought up, but some friends who did also grew up in similar ways. My parents were very, you live your walk, you don't just talk your walk. And it wasn't just because what you believed in or your faith or, you know, whether it be going to church or looking the part that mattered. It was your honesty, your integrity. My dad was huge in work ethic. There was no sleeping in on Saturdays. You woke up, you had, you know, responsibilities. He really, you know, when I say discipline in a good way, discipline to do all the things that were responsible to be a functioning adult in society, to be kind to others, to service your community, you know, and those are different things growing up that I remember were instilled. And it wasn't just, you know, your father's a minister, so you have to do this and look this way and always, always be in church. I remember my dad, while we valued going to church functions and things of that nature, he also valued family. So when everyone was having evening services or all of those things, he would encourage family nights. Those are types of things that I think stuck with me. And then because my mom was also, she was a social worker and she worked with many communities, very low socioeconomic. She goes into jails to do classes on anger management. She works with parents on how and on parenting skills. She goes into communities to service them. So to be a, you know, service to people was something that I was always around. And so my dad formed what was called Make a Difference Network And it was mainly to focus on Vietnam vets. And he did a lot of things for that community. And so when he began to where he couldn't do as much with it, he had the opportunity to have me serve as the president of that. And really, it is about living a life of purpose and making an impact on others, that we are just, we are human beings that are comprised of mind, body, and soul, and or spirit. And that is something when you really influence others and make a positive impact, where I have found, and that's one of the things that when I reflect from as a teacher to my point of my life right now, in my role as a wife, as a mom, and in my just everyday who I am, it is that if I can inspire others to either find, right, so to find their purpose or fulfill their purpose. So I always say, you know, people have to first realize their purpose, then they have to come equipped to fulfill their purpose. That is where I truly have found my energy source. So when someone comes to me and says they have succeeded due to any contribution, whether it may be supporting someone and prepping them for an interview, I did that with kids, I do that with adults, whether it me working through a big challenge with teams, whether it be working relationships, any type of challenge, if someone has overcome something and through any contribution that I've had, that is where, when you talk about true fulfillment, there's no greater joy than walking in your purpose. So it's always, how do you help others realize what that is and fulfill that purpose? And that's sort of where the premise of Make a Difference came from. And it is a lot of personal development skills that we work on, whether it be with young people in the workplace, even young people programs. I remember I doing leadership programs for teenagers. But those are powerful pieces that will, it's the foundation to what anybody wants to do in any capacity, whether it be for work or with their family. And that's kind of the premise of how that story came about.
I love it. Thank you so much for that exceptional description of the background of the Make a Difference Network, but then also just tossing in a little bit about your purpose and how that helps you feel mm-hmm. fulfilled. Because when you're sharing the example of both your mom and you, just me like, oh, you know, it's, we take this all in and it's tiring. That is so much the work of all educators and mm-hmm. adjacent Absolutely. Professions, you know, that mm-hmm. are serving, like you said, the serving professions. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. It's so easy to feel drained, but that, mm-hmm. you know, constant resilience, whether that's in the moment, whether that's daily, it's weekly, whether it's you've kind of found yourself downward in the spiral toward burnout, you know, it's how yes, we continue to yes. bounce ourselves back through all of this, and how you can have this beautiful, stunning 27-year career of influence. I just find it deeply fascinating and inspiring. Mm-hmm. So thank you for sharing all of that.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
This podcast is a proud member of the Teach Better Podcast Network. Better today, better tomorrow, and the podcast to get you there. Explore more podcasts at www.teachbetterpodcastnetwork.com. Now let's get back to the episode.
If people are listening, and we are going to link the Make a Difference Network, is that a place where they could book you for speaking, or do you have, because I know yes. your role is so big, do you have mm-hmm. space in your life to be serving organizations?
Yes. I mean, again, I am very committed to what I do full time, and yet any opportunity that I can to serve on any platform, I welcome that opportunity. And Make a Difference Network is certainly where there's a connect with us page there. And my email is pretty easy to remember. It's InspireWeb, InspireWeb@gmail.com. Those are great ways. And again, it is always a great privilege and opportunity anytime I'm afforded to bring whatever it is that, you know, whether it be individuals or groups that might be looking for, if it's something that I can service, I love to be of service to those individuals.
So glad that the audience could hear that, because I'm hoping that they'll be able to reach out to you then, because I know that there's mission in the message here. And I just am so grateful every time I get a chance to interact with you. I can only imagine what it would be like to be in your learning environment. that's a new life goal for me. So, okay. I have two standard questions from this podcast that I absolutely need to get from you. Are you ready
yes.
for those?
I am ready.
All right. The first one is, if you could write a letter to yourself at any age or stage, what would you say?
So I loved this question, and there was multiple ages. I think I shared this earlier. I was always one thinking ahead. Futuristic is a wonderful strength to have. And it gives you hope. It gives you foresight to look into the future. And what it also does is sometimes you don't get to enjoy the journey. So recognizing that you want to pull from all the greatness that futuristic can bring. It's a very responsible one to have. It's a very strategic strength to have. But if you don't slow, if you're not careful and recognize, I need to just enjoy the moment. So one of the things that I think about that I would write as advice to myself in a letter was to, number one, just to keep striving to realize your purpose while enjoying the journey. And I think that we have to recognize that each phase that we go through, the good, the bad, the struggle, the successes, they're all a part of the journey, so that when, as we realize our purpose to fulfill it, those are all integral parts. And we're going to come out on the other side to be able to speak to it, to impact others because of that. So that was one that I thought, you know, was powerful, because it is about keep striving, because it was something I always did, but don't be in such a hurry to get somewhere that you don't. It's kind of like, don't be in such a hurry to get to the destination that you don't enjoy the journey. Another piece that I think is so critical that I would have told myself in this letter is to spend quality time with family. You know, as we continue, I don't have a very large family as far as like extended family. I do have a younger brother. I have, you know, my mom and my dad. But what I also mean by family are those very close people to you, is to just spend quality time. It doesn't mean extensive time, but just those quality time at every step of your journey, because people come in and out of your life for a reason, and you are to maximize on all those individuals, which led me to that third piece of advice that I think is so important, and is that is to surround yourself with others who make you the best version of you. I think I found myself for good reasons, right? Sometimes I actually, even as a young person, I was called the mama of the group, right? So I'm always the one making sure people stayed out of trouble. I was always the one to listen to people's challenges. I don't think growing up, I don't know if my friends could even handle if I ever had a challenge. I don't know if they would know how to, what? You could have a challenge. So that's a great thing to be, but it also could be, you know, again, you're constantly pouring out. And so one of the things that I think is important, I used to tell parents of teenagers this all the time, as you're, you know, supporting young people become big people, you have, you know, as parents, you are their guardian, you are to really support their growing. And it's so important that they watch who their surroundings. And when you're a teenager in particular, as we know for adolescence development, you are very influenced by those who you are around. And so I've seen teens year after year after year from 9th to 12th grade change for good or not based on who they're around. And I think growing up, I think it's constantly striving to be around those who had great dreams for you, who made you uncomfortable only because they wanted you to be better, not to, you know, pull anybody into what made them feel comfortable. And I think as a young person growing up, and even as adults, I tell folks all the time, surround yourself with the energy and those who will constantly encourage you to be better. When I met my husband, and he has always been my number one champion, he has always made me feel that I can do more than I felt like I can do, and has had probably more faith and confidence in me at times that I had in myself. And when you surround yourself with that, especially with someone like a life partner, those are some of the best advice. You know, we look for a lot of things at young people in what we want, either in a spouse or friends, but those who really value you and encourage you to be all that you can be without any selfish and reason to keep you where they want you is some great advice that I would have found great value growing up.
I find great value in it right now. Yeah, that's the beautiful part about a question like that, because
yes,
one of the things that I heard from your advice to yourself was to embrace your strength, but also see where it can be a blinder. And I know that in your work with the Gallup strengths, that is probably just a really important way that you can use that knowledge. But that self-knowledge, it's so easy for people to say one thing and not embrace it in their own lives. That's really beautiful. All right. I got to hear this one then. If a person who's listening has just been so inspired by you, but then they're also finding themselves like in a pit of fear or doubt, what could you say to help them rise up out of it?
You know, there's a powerful statement that resonates with me every time I hear it, is just to know that you are enough. And whether you have to look in the mirror and verbalize this to yourself, as you know, women, a lot of times we do look in the mirror. There's so many, we're so critical of ourselves and so many things, physically, emotionally, intellectually. There's always someone more beautiful. There's always someone more smart. There's always someone and again, in this day in society with social media and comparing, this is where we can spiral. And I think it's the constant, as I shared earlier, you know, we are comprised of mind, body, and spirit. And the one that always is speaking to us when fear or doubt comes is our mind. And we have to constantly, proactively, one of my favorite words is intentionality. And it won't just happen. We can't just wake up and hope that it happens and hope we have a good day and hope everyone treats us the way we want to be treated. We have to be intentional to channel our minds and our thoughts every day. And so whether there are daily rituals or chants to say we are wonderfully and beautifully made, that we are here with a purpose to make an impact in this world. And whatever that is, I'm on a quest to find that. And just like you, Sarah, you're the only Sarah there is. I'm the only Michelle there is. There's people out there, no matter what your name is, there's only one you, and you are unique and have something to offer that the person to your left or to your right does not have to offer. Something that we hear a lot is like the word confidence. I said this earlier, confidence and joy are both within. They are who you are. Happiness is circumstantial. It's based on situations and circumstances. But when you have joy and you have confidence, it is something you speak daily, affirmation. Sometimes, you know, minute by minute, it's affirmations. We have to get control of our mind and our thoughts. I tell my kids this, and this is something I practice myself. Everything that goes in through your eyes and anything goes in through your ears stays in your mind. And so you have to guard what you are listening to. That's why, again, positive things such as this, as podcasts, what we read, the conversations we listen to, we're going to be faced with a lot of things that drain us. We have to be intentional to fill ourselves up with messages of hope, of confidence, and joy that's going to help us become the best version of you. And when you really practice that with all intentionality, you'll find, again, fear and doubt are fed. And the less you feed them and you feed the other, your spirit part to take over your mind, the fear becomes less and the confidence and joy becomes greater.
Absolute mic drop moment. I am sitting here wrapped with your words and really laser beaming into them, because everything that you're saying is a really powerful message for all of us and leadership and in life. And I just really appreciate how you folded in this concept of like gut comparative suffering and comparison of social media. It's so easy to do that. So just thinking about what you're consuming, and because this podcast, I mean, somebody could be listening to it 5-6 years from now, but it's going to be coming out next week. I mean, I don't know what a gift it was for Facebook and Instagram to be down for a couple hours yesterday for the world to just be able to get out of that. Right. Because it's just so easy to get caught up in that comparison trap, but it's also what you said, feeding ourselves, what goes into our, you know, what we see and what we hear is not, something that people are very mindful about, anymore. And probably, you know, this is, probably a journey that we all take, and certainly through generations have the same challenge, but, I appreciate so much that you said that fear and doubt could be fed by what you're feeding your mind. So, perfect. Listeners, you just got a message. So thank you so much, Michelle. We did already talk about how listeners could engage with you if they want your professional services. I will link your social as well. I think it's Inspire Web on what used to be Twitter.
Yes. Absolutely. Sounds good.
I know that most certainly you have given such value to my audience. You've definitely inspired me today, and that really means a lot. So thank you so much for your time and your insight. You are so, so valuable.
Thank you, Sarah. I really appreciate you as well and what you're doing. This work that you're doing is also your purpose and making a great impact. And I'm honored to have been here today, and hope that if anything I said just sparked anything for anybody, it is of great time well spent. And I thank you for that opportunity.
Thank you, Michelle. I continue to be completely awe-inspired by every single guest on this podcast, and I am so grateful every time you choose to share, rate, review an episode. It matters so greatly to the mission and the message of our guests, and I appreciate every time you help one another rise by lifting up the message. Thank you so much, and I appreciate you being a part of this awe-inspiring community.